This is CES Tech Talk. I'm James Kotecki, bringing you a media roundtable conversation on tech trends that will define 2026 and beyond. We recorded this one live at CES 2026 with some of the brightest minds in media, and we're bringing it to you right now. Enjoy.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us today. My name is Laura Ambrosio, and I'm the Communications Manager at the Consumer Technology Association, which produces CES. So I'll be moderating today's discussion, and we have a panel of top-tier reporters from Punchbowl News, ZDNet, TechRadar, and Inside AI Policy with us today, and we're going to be discussing the latest in AI. First, I'd like to welcome our panelists to briefly introduce themselves, including your name, title, and media outlet.
Hi, my name is Charlie Mitchell. I'm the editor of Inside AI Policy, and we cover federal policy on artificial intelligence. We cover the states and some of the international action.
Hi, I'm Diego Munoz. I'm the tech reporter for Punchbowl News. It's a newsletter service in Washington, D.C. We cover everything from Capitol Hill to the White House and the regulatory agencies, too.
Hi, I'm Sabrina Ortiz. I'm over at ZDNet. I'm our senior AI editor. I've been covering the beat for about 3 years now and excited to chat with you all this morning.
Hi, I'm Lance Ulanoff. I'm editor-at-large for TechRadar. We're considered the global technology experts. Just visit our site and you'll find out.
So to get us started, let's talk about what has surprised you the most about the show so far.
Sure. Well, it's so big and sprawling. I think that the diversity on several levels has surprised me. The diversity of the robots, for one thing, and the robots are kind of chase you around as you're walking on the floor, and the diversity of the technology and how it is truly a global supply chain. I think that very much that point is really driven home as you walk through the floor and you see these products and devices and technology that are developed in so many different countries. It's very impressive.
I think the sheer size too. It's my first CES, so it's the entire city. You know, everywhere you walk on the strip, you see somebody with a badge. Being a reporter in DC, I'm also surprised by the amount of government officials that came. I was just at a panel with the FCC chairman, Brendan Carr. There's several other officials. Tomorrow we have some senators fly in. So I'm surprised by the presence of government officials and the robots. there are a lot of robots. And, you know, I cover tech policy. I don't cover a lot of the tech products. So to see a lot of these products up close, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, not to echo what both of y'all said, but my first CES was 3 years ago, and I had just started on the AIB, and also is when AI started blowing up. Back then, we were talking about hypotheticals about what these models could do, where it might go. AI PCs were a huge thing, and now we've gone strides into the future from AI PCs to robots to AI pins. AI is in everything now, all kinds of hardware, so that's been really cool to see.
I would certainly say that the number of robots that wanted to shake my hand was really shocking. I've been covering technology for decades, and I've been coming to CES for 25 years. And this year is extraordinary, especially in the AI automation space. For the robots, North Hall, I've walked through there. It was stunning. But even automated self-driving cars, that automation, software-defined vehicles, and everything here is infused by AI and is accelerated by AI. And the thing I talk about the most, and I'm seeing it in action here, is that we're now living on AI time. Everything moves 3x the time it did in previous technology epochs.
So we got hit it on the head. It's one of the biggest trends at CES this year. What are some of the cool applications that you've seen for AI on the show floor today?
Sure. I, as mentioned, just the diversity of technology products is really impressive. And I've been kind of blown away by some of the robotics and AI infused technologies that we see for manufacturing, for construction, for transportation. As you walk through the floor and you see each of these things, you realize that they are poised to play very prominent roles throughout the economy. And it's just leaps and bounds ahead of where it was a couple of years ago. I think there are a lot of policy questions that follow up on that that people are just beginning to grapple with in a lot of ways. And there are a lot of interesting dialogues involving within industry and between industry and government going on.
I think a big one is the autonomous vehicles. I saw a partnership between NVIDIA and Mercedes. I didn't think they have their car there in the Fontainebleau. You know, I think that that technology, the Zoox, I think they're called, the ones in the on the strip that go up and down. They don't have steering wheels. I think that's that a lot of people in Washington are starting to think about. The OSDP director, Michael Kratzo, spoke about this yesterday, about how they want to have a regulatory approach to autonomous vehicles since it's been kind of a patchwork right now. I think AVs might be some of the first interactions that consumers will have with a physical AI products.
Yeah, so for me, I've been the most surprised by the amount of AI wearables and the different form factors they all come in. As a reporter, my job is always to be super critical and also to talk to a lot of folks. And most people show hesitancy about using these AI models. And I'm surprised by the demand that there is for things that you wear all day and are going to listen to you all day. I've seen pens that record you all day and want to listen to you. Rings now, pins. It's just really surprising. And people seem to be wanting them too. So I guess it's a good sign for AI adoption, but we'll see all the security and privacy implications that come with that.
Jan, I'm kind of most interested in the sort of small ways that AI changes everyday things. So, for example, I saw a company that was showing off an AI-driven device that could mix a scent based on what you look like and what you're wearing that day. So the AI analyzes it, mixes it together. I got a really musky scent. I don't know what that means. But also cooking. You know, devices that can cook. Nosh showing off something that can cook. And, you know, AI can, you know, the power of AI is its ability to sift through massive amounts of data and find meaning. And that can be applied to almost anything. And I think that's why we're seeing it across so many different devices and products. And of course, wearables is certainly, I've seen a lot of glasses. I've worn so many different smart glasses. But what's interesting is, although many of them will have maybe their own LLM, they'll have their own models, most of them are using or tapping into the major ones, the Geminis, the ChatGPTs, the Perplexities. So I'm not wearing smart glasses right now, weirdly.
So we've talked about how AI is transforming industries and becoming more part of everyday life. But it's also quickly evolving, and I'm sure that this conversation would have been very different last year. So can you tell me how the way you've covered AI is evolving as the landscape changes?
Yeah, I think when we started our publication about 3 years ago, there was very little structure around the policy environment. And you had industry groups that were moving very rapidly to try to put out governance frameworks and to try to define the lines of responsibility. You had the Biden administration, which kicked off a number of processes that looked like they were going to lead in a regulatory direction at some level. I'm not sure how heavy-handed they ultimately would have been, and it might not have been heavy-handed at all, but that there was definitely a regulatory direction that was embarked upon by the previous administration, and that's been halted in its tracks by the Trump administration. And their regulatory approach is all about halting things that inhibit innovation and promoting things that will help companies develop and deploy. They want to get this AI out into the field and operating and believe that it will revolutionize the economy and that it's essential to U.S. global dominance economically, politically, militarily. So it's just a very different framework. I think it's still in the creation stage, and a lot of the pieces remain to be defined. There are a lot of fast-moving parts, so it's very interesting.
I think our coverage specifically, there was a lot of the tech coverage over AI was about the models themselves, what they're capable of doing, and the applications. And still, there's a lot of that. But I think what we're starting to cover more and more, and becoming more and more important, is what makes AI possible in the physical world. And that's where data centers come in. That's where chips come in. That's where the energy demand comes in. And those are issues that policymakers have to deal with when it comes to permitting reform and when what you can do around that, when it comes to export controls and what the United States strategy to win the AI race against China will look like. I think that AI, we look at our phones and we think of the cloud and so on, but AI is very much a real thing that has physical implications for the world and communities. And it's also a major piece of the geopolitical battle between the United States and China right now. And I think that, you know, when we first heard about AI, I'm not sure a lot of reporters expected that's where the coverage would go.
One of the favorite parts of my job is meeting readers where they're at. And I think when we first started covering it, people want to know the what. What is this? What does this mean for me? What are the different applications? Which one's the best? And while that's still important, and we still always want to keep a baseline of information for people to learn as much as they can, now I think people want to know, how do I use this in my everyday life? How can I use this for work? How do I do this safely? How do I do this cheaply? How do I do this environmentally safely? So that's really what our focus point is now. And I think it's a really exciting change because it shows that people now have a baseline understanding of what it is and want to know how to do it the right way. And that's where we could do our best work, I think.
Yeah, I'd say the tech creators followed a similar path from the discovery of this thing to the rapid adoption. It's been a very quick path compared to, say, for example, how long it took for everyone to really get online, use broadband, even just, you know, switching from print to digital. Everything takes time. But in this case, consumers are using AI in their real lives. And so we're often covering sort of the human aspect of it, not just what they're doing to get things done, but how it's affecting them as human beings emotionally. I'm sure you've read the stories about like a woman who married her AI, and that's like the silly part of it. But the reality is that people are making relationships. They're making deep connections with these systems because they seem real. They seem human. They are, of course, not human. So we've actually covered that quite a bit. And I think that going back to something that you guys said over there, the fact that there's zero regulation around here is becoming a bigger and bigger problem because we're really connecting so deeply to these systems that we're using every single day.
So let's go into that a little bit more and talk about policy and regulation. And so as with any new and emerging technology, there are concerns around AI, and CTA supports a national framework, a federal framework for managing those risks while still allowing innovation to thrive. But we're also seeing a lot of activity at the state level. There's over 1,200 bills that we are tracking. And so I would like to know more about what you guys think, not only what that state patchwork would mean for consumers and businesses, but also what you expect in the coming year in terms of AI regulation and policy.
Right. I think it's a very tricky policy space. There's no question about it. And in large part, the states have moved ahead because of the inability of federal policymakers to act and set frameworks. And so you have people from all sides of the equation saying we need a federal framework with different interests in achieving a federal framework. And there are certain areas where there is, in a general sense, consensus. Ideas like protecting children. Everybody's in favor of this, but once you get down to the details, it gets very complicated again. And so, as we've seen with federal privacy legislation, which is different but related, and I don't know if anybody's followed that, but we've been trying to get a federal privacy protection standard in the United States for the last two decades. And it just keeps collapsing. And advocates of the state regulatory efforts will say, we've had to step into the breach because the feds can't act. By the same token, it's very true that it becomes very difficult for companies to navigate the patchwork of state regulation. And what happens, as we see, is that big companies are going to typically default to the standard created by California or New York or wherever. And so all the other states end up having to follow what California did. There's a lot of resistance to that. So I am not sure if they can, if a compromise is possible in this space. And at this moment, the Trump administration has tried to kind of short circuit that debate by taking steps to preempt state regulation. And the administration is going to come out with draft legislation at some point this year. Mr. Kratsios was talking about that yesterday. And I think they're putting a lot of eggs in that basket. There will be a lot of attention on what the administration puts out in terms of setting responsibilities, as well as protecting companies from liability and state regulation.
Yeah, I want to echo some of what Charlie said here. If you don't hold your breath for a federal AI standard anytime soon. This issue took up much of my time in 2025, and I don't think it'll be different in 2026. Talking to lawmakers, which is what I do for most of my week, it's hard to find anybody that says a patchwork of 50 laws is the best approach to regulate AI. There are not many advocates of that approach. I think there is a consensus that it is chaotic for companies and it may stifle innovation if you have so many different state standards. The issue is for a lot of those lawmakers, and when I'm talking about them, it is not a partisan issue, which makes it one of the most interesting things to cover in Washington. This is not by far where there's a clear cut between Democrats and Republicans. You have members of both parties and both sides of this issue. What the opponents of preemption say is you can't preempt with nothing, right? So that's why preemption has failed in Congress both times in 2025. And until both parties can sit together and find some type of legislative solution that will compromise on child and teen safety with the impact of data centers in communities and so many of the safety and so many of the other issues of AI, unless you can get to a legislative compromise, you're not going to get a federal standard and you're not going to get a legitimate preemption of the states. And the issue is, if you've observed Congress for the past couple of decades, all of these issues in which, like Charlie said, privacy, but permitting reform, all these issues in which both parties say, we need to do something about this, we need to do something about this. Well, they can't really agree on anything.
Before we wrap, I want to ask one more quick question. It's a new year. What are your projections for this year with AI? What are you looking forward to?
Yeah, like we just talked about earlier, there's a big emphasis on physical AI, which is just AI that's working in your environment to basically make your life better, working with the hardware that's already there. I think in this next year, we're going to see leaps and bounds in that direction. We're starting, like we talked about before, of AI wearables. That can be an example of physical AI. But I think we're going to make bigger strides in where we are more comfortable interacting with devices that are listening to you all the time. And then as a result, they'll be able to use that data to be more helpful. Again, security implications to be seen, but it will change, I think, a lot of the landscape.
So two things to think about in 2026, agentic AI, where the AI is kind of going out and doing things for you, many things at once, and also general artificial intelligence. They will be talking about it all year. We are probably not going to actually hit it this year. Maybe we see a glimpse from ChatGPT, GPT-6. Again, there will be major leaps. And I would just add, just on that policy front, nothing's going to get solved here. AI will, by the way, continue to accelerate faster than we can ever get ahead of it to regulate it, because, as you said, no one can agree, but it's also moving faster than anything we've ever seen.
So we covered a lot of ground. I know there's a lot more that we could go over, but thank you all for joining us today. Please give us a round of applause to our panelists.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that roundtable from CES 2026. That's our show for now, but there's always more tech to talk about. Make sure you catch all the other CES media roundtables for how technology will impact consumers and global markets and your life. Whatever channel you're on right now, be sure to follow, subscribe, like, comment, whatever else you need to do to keep those algorithms happy. You can get even more CES at ces.tech. That's ces.tech. Our show is produced by Nicole Vidovich and Paige Morris and edited by Third Spoon. I'm James Kotecki, talking tech on CES Tech Talk.